Action Cast.
Deep within the Amazon rainforest, a massive, lumbering creature lurks. This powerful animal stands 6 feet and 6 inches tall when it stands on its hind legs. This cave-dwelling monster is said to leave a trail of uprooted trees and smashed bushes in its wake. If you're unlucky enough to find yourself face-to-face with this creature, you'll be greeted by a beast with one eye, massive, gnarled claws, and a noxious odor that will most likely render you unconscious. Today, we explore the legend of the Mapinguari. Are these tales rooted in reality? Or is the cryptid creature more of a folk tale stressing the troubling realities of deforestation? Welcome to another episode of the Cabinet of Dr. Mystery. I'm your host, Dr. Mystery.
I tried to create living zombies.
Reports that have been made by credible observers of relatively incredible things.
All I gotta do is relax and they'll take me to their job.
Last chance to evacuate Earth before it is recycled.
This is a wicked, wicked world.
We are all evil in some form or another.
Hello, Mysterians, and welcome to another episode. So excited to have you back. So excited to be back in the studio recording. I am actually not in my studio. I am in a makeshift studio in my friend's living room. I am just getting out of the hospital. Everything's fine. I just needed a little bit of TLC from some hot nurses and doctors. Have you ever noticed that, like, most of the people that work in healthcare are gorgeous? Like, honestly, it's either they're hot or they are deathly ugly. I don't know what the hell is going on here. There is no middle ground at all. But it's the weirdest thing ever when doctors or nurses are doing stuff on your body, or they're talking to you about your bowel movements or like blood or sexual history or something, and they are just deadly gorgeous. Like, there is nothing more uncomfortable than a sexy ass doctor doing your prostate exam. I'm just saying. Anyway, before I begin this episode, I just wanted to address the missing Christmas episode. I lost my hard drive. So I recorded a Christmas special and actually another couple episodes, and I have no idea where my hard drive is. So I apologize. Unfortunately, whenever I find my hard drive, I will release that episode. Or if I don't find it, I will redo it. I have a couple ideas for things that we're going to do in the future. So you will see that in the future, whether I have to re-record it or not. But I do apologize. I have no idea where that hard drive is. I think it was in the Candy Montgomery episode I talked about that. But yeah, I ran into some technical difficulties editing it, and then I put my hard drive aside, and I'm not sure where it was. I was traveling for a little bit, so I could have left it with a friend or a family member, but I will find it, and if I don't find it, I will record that episode again. But I hope that you guys have enjoyed some of the new stuff that we're doing. We talked about Prey in our last episode, and we're actually going to be doing a funny kind of, I don't know, B-list horror movie commentary watch through. So we're going to be doing a little bit more of that. Yeah, we've got some cool things in the works. I'm excited to keep pumping out some stuff for season 3. But today I figured we'd cover something other than gruesome murders and cults, which we're going to be getting into some more murders and cults. But I figured, why not take a break with some fun content and talk about the Mapinguari. It's been a little while since we've talked about cryptids, so let's do it. So the Mapinguari ranges in height from 6 foot 6 inches to nearly 20 feet, depending on who you talk to and what records you look at. It's been described as having a shortened horse-like muzzle, which hosts 4 canine-shaped teeth. With long, coarse, reddish-brown hair, the beast would emit a foul odor that was rumored to knock a person unconscious. So some people do say that the creature has like more sloth-like coloring to it not like a reddish brown, but more of like a reddish blonde, like a dirty blonde kind of. And there are some cases of people straight up saying it's gray fur or black fur. So it depends on which legends you look at, which documents you read. Some legends even say that the creature's coarse fur, that it's so matted that it resembles like tree bark or crocodile skin. But one thing that everyone always talks about is that the creature had a short tail, but it compensated for the short tail with massive, massive claws, similar to the claws of like a giant anteater. Now, we're going to be talking about a few different creatures today. I think, you know, it's necessary when you're talking about cryptids to also talk about cryptids and mythological creatures and legends that can relate to it. Because as we saw in our previous cryptid episode where we talked about the Ahul, which was really fun, and I should see if I can get my buddy to come back on the show and join us again, because that was a lot of fun. You know, I think it's really interesting that there's a lot of different creatures around the world that all resemble the same one that, you know, we're talking about today. And especially with the Ahul one, like when you look at specific areas where they're less, industrialized, where they're not, you know, specifically tearing down every single rainforest. I don't know. When you look at North America, there are a select few areas within North America that could be host to mythological or cryptid creatures. We've kind of paved over everything. We've pushed most of the animals out of their natural habitats to make room for pavement and skyscrapers. So, you know, when you look at places that don't have as much of this development that we see in Western civilization, I believe that we have more of an opportunity to have real cryptids, real creatures that we think are legends. So it's fun for me to explore this because I do believe some of these could theoretically be tangible and real, especially when we're talking about something like the Mapinguari, because most of the legends go back, you know, hundreds, thousands of years. Tales of the Mapinguari originated throughout the Amazon basin, including the Amazonas, Para, and Rodonia. The name Mapinguari loosely translates to that with twisted feet. There are more fantastical legends telling of the beast having more man or ape-like features, also having only one eye like a cyclops, and of having an additional eye or a mouth on its stomach. The Mapinguari is also known to have a diet mainly consisting of plants. However, some legends talk of eyewitness accounts of livestock being consumed by the creature. Other eyewitness accounts tell of the creature killing and consuming humans that have wandered or explored too close to its caves. When the beast eats mammals, it's said to rip off the arms and legs of the creatures it kills prior to consuming the animal or human. So it would grab this creature and literally like draw and quarter it, and then it would take its giant claws and it would throw the creature into its stomach mouth, and it would eat it through its stomach mouth while looking at it with its one cyclops eye. Now, like I said before, most of what I want to do when I talk about cryptids is explore the relations or the possibility of a relation to another creature. And if we do that, sometimes we start to see connection. You know, this episode is going to be fairly quick because I honestly couldn't find a whole lot about the Mapinguari, and I couldn't find a whole lot about these other creatures that we're going to be talking about, especially the Quibungo. I really wanted to look more into that, but I couldn't really find a whole lot. So this episode is going to be relatively short, but we're still going to explore all these other creatures. So the Segamai is one creature that shares a lot of similarities with the Mapinguari. A cow-sized herbivore with matted fur and a short trunk. This creature is mostly passive, but it has been known to emit a blood-curdling scream at the sense of danger. which is really interesting because from what I can understand with the Segemai, it almost kind of looks like an anteater cow kind of creature. It's a very interesting one. And the idea of this creature being completely passive and then you scare it and it starts screaming like one of those goats. Another mythical creature of the Amazon that shares similarities is the Quibungo. Now, I'm saying mythical, but, you know, that's just my skeptical side of things saying mythical. You know, a lot of people in these societies believe that each one of these creatures is real. So I don't want to slight anybody or anybody's background. I'm just using the word mythical because up until this point, these have not been proven. This creature, the Quibungo, it's half man, half animal, and has a very large head and an enormous mouth on its back. So again, here's another one of those cases where we see, you know, something that's different from the normal creature, mammal-like thing. They don't have a mouth on their face. They have a mouth on their stomach or their back. And I think that's where a lot of people, you know, like people that have been researching this, that's where you lose a lot of people, is that difference, the mouth on the stomach or the mouth on the back. The Quibungo is known for devouring disobedient children, lowering its head and throwing the children inside its mouth filled with razor-sharp teeth. Now, this creature is doing this to disobedient children specifically, and that makes me think that this is more of a tale about, you know, obeying your elders, your parents, your siblings, your leaders in society, right? And, you know, that's why I use the word mythical for the Quibungo, because this makes me think more of, you know, the boogeyman or Cropsey. If you haven't checked out our Cropsey episode, you should check that out. This kind of relates to the same thing. The idea of Cropsey and the idea that I explored, I think it was episode like 20 or something. But the idea was that Cropsey was this myth, this legend, this urban folktale. And it was basically like, listen to your parents or Cropsey will come and take you away and devour you or do whatever he's got to do with you. And what I ended up exploring was the legend could possibly be connected to an actual murderer or an actual pedophile, right? And so that it was a really fun episode to explore that. And I think that the Quibungo is that same sort of thing as the boogeyman, as Cropsey. Like, you know, don't disobey your parents or the Quibungo will come and get you, right? The Quibungo is also called the Quibungo or the Chibungo. This myth is mainly of African origin that arrived in Brazil through the Bantu people. Finally, the last creature that I wanted to explore today was the Megatherium. When we look at the Megatherium, when we look at the Mapinguari, what we're looking at is sort of a connection to a sloth. And I think that's what most people make that instant connection to, is like the Mapinguari is a sloth that has a mouth on its stomach and is a little bit more stinky, right? So sloths are part of the, I'm probably not going to pronounce this correctly, the Xenarthra family, which also includes anteaters, glyptodonts, and armadillos. And I don't know what a glyptodont is. I probably should have looked that up. I just put it in here because I was exploring the Xenarthra family. It's believed that the now extinct elephant-sized ground sloth, which is the Megatherium, is related to the Mapinguari. I've seen pictures of the skeletons, like the fossilized skeletons, and I've seen pictures of what these things are supposed to have looked like. They are massive, like wildly massive. I cannot imagine a sloth coming at me the size of an elephant. And I believe that these things were supposed to be like much faster than they are now. They're incredibly slow now. I believe they were much faster before. That being said, really what I'm doing is I'm comparing something from you know, millions of years ago, or at least hundreds of thousands of years ago, to me today. So like when you look at this, it's easy for you to just say, whoa, that's wild, right? But at the same time, you have to think about how everything would have been bigger back then too. A couple theories that I have, or a couple of theories that I've seen. The main and the most popular theory about this creature, and the logical conclusion that I can come to about what it actually is that these giant ground sloths, these Megatherium, that were long thought to be extinct, are still in existence in smaller populations in remote parts of the country. That's my theory. That's my conclusion. Many theories attribute the sightings of the creature to a combination of real-life sightings of the thought-to-be-extinct giant sloth with the legends of the mythical cryptid creature. Believing these legends and rare real-life sightings blend together to create a deeper rooting in the legend. Now, something that I did want to bring up, many people argue that this thinking is colonialistic and negates the symbolism of the original stories told by the indigenous people. So I'll read you a quote in a second here about one of the doctors that was studying this and what his views are on people coming up with their own theories. I'm stating my theory because I don't necessarily, you know, like I understand the mythology behind it. I understand that this is a story that was, you know, it belongs to these people and we should honor that. But, you know, when you have these stories, you're also tempted to explore the idea of the possibility of this being real. So I'm not out to disprove this, because even if this isn't real, even if this creature does not exist, it still exists in the hearts and minds of those people that live in that society. And therefore, it does exist. If you look at the idea of tulpas, which I do believe in the idea of tulpas. So it's easy for you, if you believe in the idea of tulpas and you explore the theory and the idea of tulpas, I'm getting off track here, but the idea of a tulpa is essentially that if enough people believe in something, it's real. You know, whether you believe that it's real because they believe it, or that these individuals can actually manifest this being to become true, or this thing to become true, I do believe that tulpas are real, and we'll have to explore that in a further episode. So I just wanted to clarify that I'm giving you a theory, because that's part of what I do here on the show. But I also don't want to negate or take away anything from the symbolic mythology and how important this legend is to those people. So let me read you, now that I'm done going on my rant, let me read you a quote from Dr. Andriola Costa. I would invite you to understand the Mapinguari as a representation of the active fear of what dehumanizes us, what makes us monsters, bestial, blind to the suffering that afflicts others, blind to the castration of our actions and desires. In the end, however, the weak point, the belly button, will always be there to remind us that under all that leather, shell, fur, that makes us insensitive, there is a human being that can be accessed again. So essentially what I take away from this is that the Mapinguari legend, to him, to his interpretation, represents us being dehumanized, us committing cruel acts against each other or against animals or whatever, you know, us doing things that make us less of a human being, that cause us to be distanced from society. And, you know, it's a way for their society to remind themselves and that, like, even though individuals commit actions that are unbecoming, people are not without salvation. People are not without saving. And, you know, I think that the Mapinguari legend is really important, regardless of whether or not this creature actually exists. I think the idea of a legend that could protect its people, a creature that was there to protect the forest, a legend of a creature that, you know, invites you to think about humanity and think about how people aren't above salvation or aren't without humanity at some point in their lives, even if they're acting unbecoming. You know, this idea of this creature that instills good beliefs in kids. I think that this legend is important regardless of whether or not it's real. So I just wanted to say thank you so much for listening, and we'll check you out in another episode. This one's just going to be a quick one. Once I'm recovered fully and back on my feet, I'll start recording some longer shows, but I'm excited for the Killer Sofa episode that's going to be coming up next week or the week after, and I invite you to watch that. So I'm saying watch because essentially what we're doing is we're doing like a full movie commentary, and we're having a lot of fun with it. I just thought it could be something interesting and fun to change things up a little bit, whether we do something serious where we have more of a discussion about the movie while we're watching it, or we watch something funny like the Killer Sofa movie that's coming up. You know, I thought it would just be something fun to do. So I invite you to check that out. Essentially, you just sync up your movie to the show and we watch it together, basically. This episode is produced by Death Hotel Creative, hosted by myself, Dr. Mystery. To view more and to grab your exclusive cabinet of mystery merch, visit us at notwhatwesay.com, check out our Instagram handle at Cabinet of Mystery, or our Twitter at Open the Cabinet. Please leave us a review if you enjoyed the show, and let us know what topics you'd like to hear in the future. You can hit us up either on the socials or at cabinetofmystery@gmail.com. If you'd like to leave us a voice message and appear in upcoming episodes, you can leave us a voicemail at anchor.fm/cabinetofmystery. For sources on this episode, please see the episode description. Thank you for listening, and please subscribe or follow for more episodes.